Good afternoon. It is 19 minutes after 5 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, Sitka. 61 degrees outside with some light rain, a little fog as well. I'm Ed Ronco with Raven News for Wednesday, September 4th, 2013. Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell says his agency will continue to rely on the support of conservation groups to perform forest restoration as long as federal dollars for the work continue to dwindle. Tidwell was in Southeast Alaska last week for a review of the Forest Service's regional operation. The hands-on review by agency officials takes place about once every 7 years. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Speaking to reporters during the review, Tidwell said that the Forest Service was still focused on building sustainable economies in timber and minerals throughout the nation, but that it valued its partnerships with conservation groups for restoration work. Without partnerships, Tidwell suggested that the work might not get done.
We got to be able to expand our capacity, and we can't always rely just on appropriated dollars because those have continued to go down. Our staffing's gone down, but at the same time, the needs, the resource needs to be able to restore these systems, that hasn't gone away. So, yeah, we're reaching out to conservation groups and to all of our different partners to be able to find more ways to be able to build capacity so that we can meet the needs of the public, meet the needs of our communities. It's one of the ways that this region is responding to that need with the realities that we have a lot less people, a lot less resources than what we've had in the past.
Sitka District Ranger Carol Goulart told the Sitka Assembly on August 13th that staffing in her office had dropped from 137 employees in 1996 to 63 now. She said there were plans on the board to possibly drop that number further to 42. Not many timber sales have been planned out of the Sitka District recently, but several large restoration and young growth projects in Sitco Bay, Stargavin, and Fubar Creek have all had significant participation by district staff. The actual restoration work, the boots on the ground, is being funded through collaborations of various conservation groups like Trout Unlimited, the Sitka Conservation Society, and the Nature Conservancy. SCS Director Andrew Tomes was selected to sit on a panel on young growth and restoration during the chief's review.
I think that we expected that the Forest Service would make a quicker transition into the new management focus that focused more on fisheries, watershed restoration, investments in the visitor industry and recreation and tourism, a larger focus on subsistence management rather than the same old focus on the old logging program on the Tongass.
In 2009, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced a far-reaching vision for the Forest Service along these lines. But Tidwell's sights are on the more traditional realities of the agency and anchored in logging.
It takes a combination of not only what we can do to provide for great fisheries habitat in the streams, but to be able to respond to the needs for minerals development, to be able to respond to the needs for hydro development, to be able to continue to provide sustainable flow of timber that can provide an industry that we can sustain over time.
The Sitka Conservation Society's Andrew Tomes said the Young Growth and Restoration Panel concentrated on fisheries, where SCS and other organizations have been stacking a lot of their chips lately. He thinks the message was delivered.
I think one of the biggest eye-openers for them was the salmon, and that the Tongass is really a salmon-producing forest. I know that some of the members of the contingent that were here got to go out fishing, and they went coho fishing, and they saw all of the trollers, the hundreds of small businesses that operate on the Tongass, and the charter fishermen who are out there taking visitors out and catching these coho salmon, which over 80, 90% of those come from the Tongass National Forest.
The amount of fishing businesses that the Tongass sustains, Tomes added, is something that people from outside the region just don't understand. In addition to Chief Tidwell, the other members of the chief's review included the Forest Service's senior management from Washington, D.C. Tomes says that conservation groups like SCS have willingly partnered with the Forest Service in restoration, but that the time has come in the transition for the agency to take a greater leadership role. Reporting in Sitka with help from Matt Miller in Juneau, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The United States and Canada celebrated Labor Day earlier this week. That's a day set aside to recognize workers, of course. In Alaska, it was also a good day to collect signatures on two initiatives that their backers hope will protect workers. One is statewide to increase the state's minimum wage. The other asks Anchorage voters to overturn a municipal law that limits the rights of city employees. As Rosemarie Alexander reports, some union officials are concerned a nationwide decline in wages and benefits is making its way north.
If we don't do something about it, then I think Labor Day is kind of relegated to being remembered as nothing more than just the last barbecue of summer.
Vince Baltrami is president of the Alaska AFL-CIO, the state's largest labor organization. Baltrami says attacks on organized workers in some lower 48 states and the right-to-work movement is embodied in the Anchorage ordinance passed last March that eliminates city employees' right to strike, takes away incentive pay and bonuses in future contracts, and restricts annual pay increases to no more than 1% of the Anchorage cost of living. Baltrami is helping collect about 7,100 signatures of qualified voters to put the ordinance on the Anchorage ballot.
We've only had a week to collect signatures, and we're already creeping up on the requisite number.
Alaska has the second highest union representation in the nation, according to Baltrami, but he and other union officials are concerned it will be a target for those who want to make it a right-to-work state. A Labor Day message sent out by Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks Central Labor Councils indicates that high union participation increases Alaska's median wage for all workers by nearly $4,000. The information is gleaned from U.S. Census data. It also shows a strong correlation between union participation and education. Juneau Central Labor Council President Pete Ford says it suggests jobs in right-to-work states are usually lower income.
They also tend to be jobs that are not career-type jobs, and in many instances, they're jobs that tend to get packed up and moved away depending on what political winds might be taking place.
Right-to-work does not provide a general guarantee of employment. Instead, right-to-work states prohibit negotiated agreements between labor unions and employers that require employee membership or union dues. About half the states have right-to-work laws. Alaska unions are also helping push a statewide initiative to increase the minimum wage from $7.75 to $9.75 an hour by 2016. Then the minimum wage would be annually adjusted for inflation. Three former state Labor Department commissioners have organized the effort. Supporters have a year to collect 30,000 signatures of qualified Alaska voters to put the initiative on next year's ballot. The AFL-CIO's Beltrami says since 2009, about 70% of the jobs created in the U.S. are low wage, mostly in retail and fast food service.
Meaning that if people work full-time, they're still going to be right around the poverty level.
For a two-person household in Alaska, that's a little over $19,000 a year, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Social Services. Alaska is among 19 states in the District of Columbia where minimum wage is greater than the federal floor of $7.25 an hour. The Obama administration wants the U.S. Congress to raise the federal minimum wage to $9 an hour. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
The state of Alaska plans to announce the amount of this year's permanent fund dividend on September 18th. The eagerly anticipated event will be held in Anchorage with Acting Revenue Commissioner Angela Rodell making the announcement. Most Alaskans receive dividend checks, which come from investment profits from the state's oil wealth savings account. The amount of investment earnings allocated to dividends is based on a five-year rolling average of how the permanent fund performs. The average includes 2009 during the recession, when the fund posted a $2.5 billion net loss in statutory net income. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation last year transferred $605 million to the state permanent fund dividend division for checks. This year, the corporation expects to transfer about $604 million. Last year's dividend was $878. That's the lowest since 2005.